This is Vermont Edition, a production of Vermont Public Radio. This program is made possible by the support of listeners like you. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In 2004, Vermont legalized medical marijuana. The state is now one of 14 nationwide that allows for its use. While federal law still prohibits marijuana possession even for medical purposes, last year the U.S. Justice Department said it wouldn't go after patients who have the legal right to use marijuana in their state. But legally obtaining the drug is still a murky prospect in Vermont. For the 169 people currently registered to use medical marijuana, they can either grow their own or a designated caretaker can grow the plant. But Senator Jeanette White, chair of the Government Operations Committee, says that system just doesn't work for most patients.
They're 73 years old. They have a debilitating disease. They have no ability to grow it themselves. They don't have any friends who they think they can ask to grow it for them. Where are they going to go to find medical marijuana? Are they going to walk around the alleys? We've had people call and say, well, what does a drug dealer look like? What am I looking for if I go out and buy it?
Two bills in the Vermont legislature aim to make the system easier to navigate for medical marijuana users in Vermont by creating legal dispensaries. The Senate bill is moving forward and late last week was voted out of the Government Operations Committee. Today we're going to hear more about the bill from senators on both sides of the issue, as well as why the Department of Public Safety opposes the measure. Plus, we'll hear from you. Are medical marijuana dispensaries a reasonable way to ensure that legal registered users can legally obtain the drug? Or are there problems with legal enforcement and abuse that you think could come along with dispensaries? You can let us know what you think by calling 1-800-639-2211, 1-800-639-2211, or email us at vermontedition@vpr.net. And joining me today in VPR's Montpelier studio are Senator Hinda Miller, a Democrat from Burlington and one of the sponsors of S-226, and Senator Randy Brock, a Republican from St. Albans, who voted against the bill. Thanks to both of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Hinda Miller, maybe you could start by just explaining for people who don't know who is allowed to register to use medical marijuana already in the state.
Well, there are about 200 patients that are registered, and the bill in 2004 said that if a patient had debilitating illness, for instance, MS, HIV, cancer, or anything that's totally debilitating, and the doctor gave them a sheet of paper that said, yes, they have this debilitating illness, then the patient could choose to get some medical marijuana, of which there's research that shows that marijuana does help relieve chronic pain. And then they could send an application in to the Department of Public Service to make sure that they are a citizen in good standing and does not have a criminal record. Then they would get a card, and then they would be an official a person who was able to grow, as was so described, marijuana for the pain that they're experiencing.
We heard just a moment ago from Senator White, who explained some of the difficulty that some of these patients have in obtaining marijuana if they're not able to grow it themselves. Is that what your bill is designed to
address?
Correct.
I think this is a natural outcome from the medical marijuana bill. Now we want to have safe, reliable access in a controlled, secure environment. We don't want that 73-year-old to go to the corner looking for a drug dealer. As you may know, marijuana plants take at least 3 months to grow. You have to have the proper conditions and care to grow these plants. And we felt that we have called these centers that are in these bill called compassion centers. In the bill, there are five allowed to happen in this state in a nonprofit status, and they are tightly regulated. They're regulated by Department of Public Service and the Department of Health.
Department of Public Safety.
Safety, I'm sorry. Correct.
Now, Senator Brock, what's your main opposition to this bill?
Well, I have several areas of concern about the bill in particular, and take them in no particular order. The notion that we're providing something that is as safe and dependable as a source is not necessarily true, because there's nothing in this bill that relates to the marijuana being dispensed by a dispensary as being free of toxicity, being free of pesticides, or otherwise being free of contamination. Marijuana is an illegal drug under federal law. It is a class one drug. All we're doing with medical marijuana dispensaries is we're transferring criminality from an individual to a dispensary. The original source of the drug, regardless, remains a criminal act. We have the universal opposition to this particular bill from the Vermont Department of Health, the Department of Public Safety, the Vermont Sheriff's Association, the Vermont Police Association, and others. And although there seems to be an assumption that medical marijuana is an established drug that is approved for use, is safe for use, and has medical efficacy, even the most recent pronouncements by the American Medical Association, which say that research should be done about the efficacy of medical marijuana, it also includes a statement that this should not be viewed as an endorsement of state-based medical cannabis programs, the legalization of marijuana, or that specific evidence on the therapeutic use of cannabis meets the current standards for a prescription drug product.
But considering that we do allow in this state right now for the use of medical marijuana, where would you suggest that people get that marijuana? Should there be some place safe that they can get it?
Well, the question is not so much should there be a place. Ideally, if we were to say, and if we were to continue to contend that medical marijuana should be distributed, a position that I certainly have not adopted, then the question is, does the state have the ability to provide that assurance? And in providing any kind of assurance of something, you have to weigh all of the issues. In every other state that has adopted dispensaries, a number of significant problems has developed, not the least of which is the issue of proliferation. In Colorado, for example, that started out with 1,600 people, a relatively small number for the size of the state, on a medical marijuana registry. Once dispensaries were added, they have 21,000 people and 40,000 people pending. The same thing has happened in Montana, where there was a relatively small number, and once dispensaries arrived, a much larger number. And you have to understand that physicians are not issuing a prescription for this drug. They're simply saying that a patient has a particular condition, and one of those conditions is severe and persistent pain. And that's one that's very difficult to truly evaluate. In other states where this has happened, a number of physicians, typically a relatively small number of physicians, have been involved in providing relatively large numbers. And it's unclear as to whether there's any control mechanism in this, because clearly the physicians are not providing a prescription that, again, would be regulated under federal law.
Now, I want to get Senator Miller's response, but we should point out that Colorado and California, while they do have dispensaries, they don't have very many regulations on them. And Vermont would have regulated dispensaries within this bill. So it's a slightly different kind of setup for dispensaries, and many states have different setups. A lot of states are experimenting with how this should go. Senator Miller, what do you think?
I think this bill is a very practical bill. We have already passed a bill saying that those people with chronic and persistent pain may use medical marijuana. The research has been done that marijuana does help chronic pain. So that decision has already been made. To back up conceptually and say you don't agree with that, that's everyone's prerogative. We're dealing with people who have testified, who have said that marijuana has helped them, in particular a man with MS who says, nothing else has worked. This is what I need, but I need a place that I can rely on. So specifically to unregulated states like Colorado and California, we in Vermont have learned from that. We don't want doctors sitting on the side giving prescriptions for, insomnia and nervous conditions. We want people who can validate the kind of chronic illness that they have and that they choose to go and go through the procedure of getting the card and being able to find a place that's highly regulated, not only by the amount of plants that have to be used, by the security. There are very strict parameters and regulations. The dispensary or compassion center can grow marijuana. If it's over 14 patients, they can grow a certain amount of plants. If it's under 14 patients, they can grow another amount, a smaller amount. They have to.
And let's just say, so that people know, the maximum amount in this bill would be 98 immature plants and 2 mature plants and 28 ounces of prepared marijuana. That would be the maximum for a dispensary in the state?
Yes, I believe so. And the so they have to this is not an easy thing to do. There are only 5 that will get chosen from applications to the Department of Health. And the applicant would have to show their plan, their business plan, their location, all the requirements, the physical requirements, the administration requirements, where they're going to grow the plants. If they're not going to grow the plants in that dispensary, they must state where the dispensary is. It would be a locked area. Local police would know. The Department of Public Safety would know. And the Department of Health approves the people that they think are best able to produce what is needed. The Department of Public Safety does a criminal check on those who want to do dispensaries. So we feel that it is tightly controlled. We're not going to be on the path of Colorado or California, but we do feel an obligation to those patients to create a safe, reliable, accessible place to get it. And we feel that we are, in fact, decriminalizing the very way that people now have to get their marijuana. This is the beginning of looking at marijuana. The enforcement of marijuana takes a lot of resources, of which the Department of Public Safety is very aware of. And as you know, as a state, we have scant resources right now. I believe that much of the opposition may be the resources needed for oversight, both in the Department of Health and in the Department of Public Safety. But this is something that we have to take on and won't be the end of our looking at the at what to do with marijuana and the resources it takes to as we continue making it a criminal offense.
Well, I want to make sure that we do get the input of the Public Safety Department. We weren't able to have Commissioner Tom Tremblay on the show today, but I did speak with him earlier this week. His department has come out in opposition to this bill, and I'd like to hear a little bit of what the commissioner had to say about that.
What we have to understand first is that this is contrary to federal law. It's in conflict with federal law. So contrary to any state law, marijuana remains an illegal drug under federal law, and it is, in fact, a Schedule I drug that has not been scientifically proven safe and effective in accordance with the FDA. And as a result, it puts the Department of Public Safety in direct conflict with federal law would be one of the major issues that we have with this, of course.
But aren't you already in violation of federal law in the sense that Vermont already allows medical marijuana?
We are. And this just puts us on an even more of a slippery slope. The second reason that is of major concern for us from public safety is that marijuana dispensaries have failed in every other state where they exist. There is a huge concern for criminal activity that occurs in and around the dispensaries. There is the opportunity to sell a very small amount of marijuana out the front door for medical purposes, but a rather large opportunity to sell illegal marijuana out the back door. My 30 years of law enforcement, marijuana is a significantly abused substance here in Vermont. Drug Enforcement Administration suggests that it's the most commonly abused illicit drug in the United States, and that's certainly consistent with my experience in 30 years in law enforcement.
Now, this bill does have some restrictions. It spells out that these dispensaries could grow a regulated amount of marijuana at a separate confidential facility that would be known to law enforcement, local law enforcement officials. The bill also says that the Public Safety Department would be able to set additional restrictions, like who could qualify to volunteer or work at these compassion centers. So why don't those restrictions satisfy you?
Well, first of all, the restrictions that they've placed in other states, I think California was one of the first, and do any amount of research, you'll see that California's failed terribly. Colorado has had some of the same failures. It's extremely difficult to create regulation and enforcement around regulation of this when you're talking about plants and quality of the plant, the quantity of the plants. To create a level of regulatory and enforcement of regulatory issues is going to be extremely costly. The Department of Public Safety, like many other state agencies, has eliminated over 30 positions. So given all of the failures we're seeing in the other states and the fact that we're in a recession where we're cutting services, why are we thinking about increasing services and costs for a very, very, very small percentage of Vermont's population? This would cost us hundreds of thousands of dollars, I believe, to regulate it appropriately.
When you say it would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, where do you get those dollar figures?
Well, it would come in the way of personnel. If you read through the bill, there's a number of requirements that the Department of Public Safety is being asked to fulfill. I don't have the capacity in the way of human resources to deal with those without creating additional positions.
Do you have a sense of how many law enforcement officers agree with you or departments agree with you on this issue?
There's broad agreement across law enforcement, local, county, and state law enforcement. Nobody wants this in their town because of the experiences of other states. One of the things I've suggested, we know that Rhode Island and Maine have recently passed legislation and are in the process of trying to create dispensaries in their states. I think it would be wise for us in Vermont to give it a little bit of time and wait and see if Maine and Rhode Island can work out some of the kinks that the other states have not been able to work out to relieve some of the stresses on the public safety system and the criminal justice systems.
In the meantime, though, for the people in Vermont who are registered with the state and can legally use medical marijuana, how do you suggest that they purchase it?
Well, first of all, I have to disagree with the fact that they're legally using marijuana and the fact that the state has created a law, and it's our responsibility to enforce the laws. So there's a law that allows it, but it's in conflict with federal law, which just makes me very uncomfortable. You know, it's not a perfect system. Everybody's saying, well, where can they get it legally and how are they going to get it? These are the problems that you have when you design state laws that are in conflict with federal law. And to me, we ought to be putting our energy forward, trying to work with federal law to see how we can relieve that.
How do you navigate and how do law enforcement officials in Vermont navigate between the state law and the federal law on this issue?
With the current law, we're taking a very much hands-off approach. There is no real regulatory enforcement going on with the current law. There's registration of caretakers, there's registration of patients, but we're not involved at all in inspecting those places where the caretakers are growing marijuana like they want us to do with the dispensaries. And it's between a rock and a hard place for everybody in this situation, because if you don't regulate it, there'll be huge problems. But if you do regulate it, it's going to be so costly, and there's so many unknowns in this because, again, we have this conflict with federal law.
That was Vermont's Public Safety Commissioner Tom Tremblay. I spoke with him earlier this week. And we are talking today about the idea of medical marijuana dispensaries and whether Vermont should allow the creation of up to 5 of them to serve citizens who are registered to use the drug. We're going to hear from you coming up. Our number is 1-800-639-2211, or you can send an email to vermontedition@vpr.net. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're talking about the idea of creating medical marijuana dispensaries in Vermont. Since 2004, medical marijuana has been legal in the state, but unless patients can grow their own plants, there's no legal way to obtain the drug. A bill in the Senate would allow for the creation of up to 5 nonprofit compassion centers around the state where registered users could pick up small amounts of the drug. This issue is triggering alarm bells for law enforcement agencies, as we just heard from Public Safety Commissioner Tom Tremblay. We're also talking today with Senator Hinda Miller, who co-sponsored the Senate bill, and with Senator Randy Brock, who opposes the legislation. If you have a thought or a question about how these dispensaries would operate, you can call 1-800-639-2211 or send an email to vermontedition@vpr.net. And let's go to Chris, who's calling from Danby. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi. Obviously, a lot of people are in real need of medical marijuana. One of the biggest problems people are facing is it's a one drug. Doctors are not allowed to prescribe it. They're allowed to recommend it. And that's putting up a lot of blocks for people. It's preventing law enforcement from getting behind it, and it's preventing people from getting the medicine they need. Some of the things that are, you know, happening is lack of education. People shouldn't be really smoking it or using it for medical purposes. They should be vaporizing it. That eliminates a lot of the carcinogens that are found in the smoke. Also, there are different varieties available for people, and these varieties are, you know, I'm not really sure if these dispensaries are going to be offering sativas or indicas and the different kinds of effects that these things can offer for people, whether it be for pain reduction or for just easing nausea for cancer patients. You know, this kind of information isn't out there, and I think, you know, that the education really needs to be looked at. And, you know, a little bit of information.
So, Chris, you'd like to see the dispensaries? You do approve of that idea?
Well, you know, it needs to be done properly. There needs to be organic, you know, organic herb offered to people. You know, some of these things, like what's happened in other states, you know, there really isn't that, the people checking to see how it's being grown. Are pesticides being used on this stuff? Is it growing with just, you know, really bad fertilizers? You know, this stuff needs to be grown organically. It's for patients. And I think a little bit of education can go a long way into helping people, you know, who are really suffering. And, yeah, people do need this for their health. And there are a lot
Chris,
of people
I,
out there.
I hear your point. Thank you so much for making the call. We're going to make sure that we get some responses from our guests today on that. Randy Brock, you mentioned earlier the idea of pesticides. You don't think there's enough regulation on how the plants will be grown.
Well, there's no regulation about how the plants will be grown in this particular bill. And that is a major concern. But I think there's a larger concern as to whether or not what essentially is being proposed as a medicine ought to be, in effect, approved by anecdote as opposed to approved by medical evidence. And it's the absence of that. And we have a kind of a universal concern expressed from the Vermont Department of Health, the National Institutes of Health, as well as the American Medical Association, that this is not yet at a point where it really ought to be considered for medical use. This is a federal issue, and that's where it ought to be decided.
Senator Miller.
Well, I want to thank our caller. I think he has some good points about what is the quality of what's going to be offered and the education around it. This has been passed by our Governor Affairs Committee and will come to the Senate floor, and then it will go to the House so it can be improved. I want to just talk a little bit about coming back to our federal laws. Sometimes what's happening on the ground happens more quickly than what our federal laws will enable us to do, and I think that's what medical marijuana has happened around the country. And I just want to quote from a memorandum from the U.S. Department of Justice that was sent October 19, 2009, to the deputy to our attorney generals, that said, as a general matter, pursuit of these priorities should not focus federal resources in your states on individuals' actions are in clear and unambiguous compliance with existing state laws providing for the medical use of marijuana. So I think that this law is under consideration at the federal level. They know what's happening on the ground. And I think that states are much closer to the people and the needs of the people. And this is well thought through as far as regulation.
We did hear from Tom Tremblay a moment ago that regardless of the fact that the federal government isn't going to be on the offensive in terms of targeting people who
right.
have prescriptions, it is still a violation of federal law, and that makes a lot of law enforcement officials very uncomfortable.
It does, and I'm sorry for that. But the reality is that we've already allowed 200 patients to receive these registered cards. They're put at cards to use medical marijuana. They're put at a very unfair advantage, almost that they have to deal with the criminality of the black market. And that's not fair, and they're not able to deal with that. So when we wrote this bill, we're on this journey of making this available, safe, regulated, and so the police will absolutely know where it's being grown, how much it's being grown, and you'll have two agencies for oversight. So it's not the Wild West. It's more of a much low-key, regulated, only five in our state. We're not going to become a California. We are part of Rhode Island, Massachusetts. They're looking at, you know, regulation, which is how we chose to do it.
Now, Senator Brock, we had a lot of questions from listeners who wanted to know why we're not having these prescriptions available in pharmacies. There seems to be some confusion about whether or not these are prescriptions and why pharmacists, if it's considered a medicine, why they can't be dispensed there. Can you just quickly clarify why pharmacies don't work?
A Schedule I drug, as far as the Drug Enforcement Administration, which is the federal agency that regulates pharmacies. Pharmacies cannot get involved in distributing something that's illegal under federal law. That is it in essence.
And similar for prescriptions. Doctors cannot write a prescription.
Now, realistically, to just amplify what Commissioner Tremblay said, this issue of criminality also has to take into account unintended consequences. In other states where there have been dispensaries and marijuana growing operations, they have become a magnet for crime. Just today, in today's New York Times, there's an article about violence prompts debate over medical marijuana, which refers to Seattle, Washington, or the state of Washington, which has such a law. The past week, a man near Tacoma died, reportedly beaten while confronting people trying to steal marijuana plants from his property. On Monday, a prominent medical marijuana activist shot an armed man accused of breaking into his home where he grows and distributes marijuana plants. Another article from the Denver Post, similar kind of thing of criminal activity. Now, when we create particularly these growing operations that are separate from the dispensing operations, make no mistake, these are going to be magnets for people who want to commit crimes. And one of the issues that also concerns me a lot about this bill is if someone sets up a marijuana growing operation next to you, you are prohibited from knowing about it. Your local law enforcement agency may know about it, but they can't tell you. I would argue that
illegal growers now, you might not know if you're a neighbor, and law enforcement doesn't know. So at least somebody who has some regulating authority would know.
But if something were set up, somebody having a regulating authority, if it were an illegal activity, would at least be looking for it and trying to shut it down to remove the threat from you. Here the threat would be a continuous one.
Can I mention something that in the bill it says that municipalities can enact ordinances banning, governing, or restricting compassion centers. These people have to go through local planning. The town has to be aware of where it is. These aren't secret areas where these things are happening. They're well known, and the
well known to law enforcement.
Well known to law enforcement and municipalities who are doing the zoning. They also have to know where these places are.
Well,
and
let me add that there is language also in the bill, though, that pertains to the dispensary itself. But if there is a growing operation that is located at a location separate from the dispensary, which is where the risk is, that is confidential. That is not a public disclosure item, according to this bill.
It is, but local and state law officials must know where those locked facilities are. Mm-hmm. So we feel we have the safeguards for which this can happen under strict regulation.
We've got a lot of callers who want to get in on the conversation.
Let me add one thing beforehand. I think we also have to step back and look at what all of this is about. We've been talking about medical marijuana, but one of the principal sponsors who provided the lobbyist support that helped draft this is the Marijuana Policy Project. And medical marijuana is one of the things they're interested in, but they're also interested in lobbying for legislation and sponsoring ballot initiatives to replace marijuana prohibition with a sensible system of regulation. They also support lobbying Congress to reduce the White House drug czar's budget for his deceptive ad campaigns, unquote. This is, make no mistake, this is an attempt to legalize marijuana far beyond simply medical marijuana. And if you look at how the bill was drafted originally, before we made some of the changes that we did, I think that becomes very apparent what this is about.
I want to make sure we have time for the calls, but Hinda Miller, I want you to be able to respond very quickly to that.
Well, marijuana, a lot of people smoke marijuana, whether it's legal or not. We have to come to terms with that. The war around marijuana wastes so much resources. We haven't been able to regulate marijuana. So that's a total illusion. And this is a practical way to begin to deal with the medicinal effects of using marijuana. So the idea that we've been successful with our drug war, with all our drugs, we haven't been successful, but the billions of dollars to prevent people from getting marijuana has not had any significant effect. And we have to
face
that.
But you said a moment ago that this is part of a path that we're on in terms of regulating marijuana. Are you saying that it is not a path to legalizing marijuana?
Not at all. This is a path of dealing with what's happening and dealing with a law that we have passed.
Let's go to the calls. Tom is on the line from Huntington. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm just calling because I'm a pharmacist that works in the retail setting, and I've also got 20-some years experience in the clinical setting. And I've seen a lot of people who have come to me and talked to me just recently about the medical marijuana bill and wondering what they're going to do to get the stuff. And I'm like thinking, okay, we have the opportunity here to set it up in a correct manner so that people have access to the drug if, you know, the doctor who's screened the patient says, yeah, we've tried all these other things. Let's get another tool in the arsenal. Let's get some medical marijuana for them. But let's not set it up in a place like a liquor store, but someplace where they can be monitored to make sure that they're getting the right optimum dose of their other medications and then add the marijuana to it. So speaking from a clinical background, I'm thinking that, you know, these things should be set up in not just some, you know, drugstore front, but, you know, maybe looking at in the hospital setting or an outpatient setting at a hospital.
Well, therefore, Tom, thank you for that. I hear your perspective. We're running short on time, so I want to make sure we get another call. And I think we've addressed the issue that they can't be dispensed in pharmacies or hospitals at the moment because federal law would prohibit that. But really appreciate your perspective as a pharmacist. Let's go quickly to Jay in Sudbury. Jay, you just have a second. You there,
Hello?
Jay?
Yep,
hi,
I
go
am.
Ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to make a comment, and this really doesn't help in the legislation of the bill, which I'm in favor of, in the details. But I have to laugh at the hypocrisy of both the federal government and others in the medical field when we have herbal supplements that are not regulated, that are not effective, and sometimes not safe, and they do nothing for certain diseases. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And here we have something that does work, and I disagree with your earlier speaker. It does have clinical effects, and we're still toying with this.
Well, Jay, thanks very much for your opinion. And James, very quickly in Richmond. Go ahead. You there, James? Go ahead, James. Oh, I guess we lost James. Well, I'm going to give the last comment here to Senator Hindemiller. I want to know if you have a sense. This bill passed out of your committee, the Government Operations Committee, last week. Where is it going to go next? When might we see some action on this in the full Senate?
Well, I believe that it's going to be on the floor either this week or early next week, and we're hoping that it's going to pass. I just want to say I'm not on the governor's Government Affairs Committee, but I am one of the main sponsors of the bill. So I think there's a lot of support in this. I know there's a lot of support in the House. They have their own bill. This is something that people have been asking us since we passed the bill in 2004. So I think we've done a good job. There's always room for improvement, and that will happen as we continually improve new things that the legislature begins. And I think that we're serving our constituents, which is what the job that we have to do.
Well, we'll continue to follow this. And listeners, if you'd like to add your comments to the discussion, you can go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. We'll put a public comments page up there. Senator Hindemiller and Senator Randy Brock, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last fall, the Bushway packing plant in Grand Isle was shut down after undercover videotape was released showing abuse and mistreatment of animals before they were slaughtered. The plant remains closed, but the discussion of how to enforce laws on the treatment of animals in slaughterhouses continues. Addison County Senator Harold Gaillard has introduced a bill that would add a new layer of inspection to the current rules on operating slaughterhouses. He joins us now from the State House. Senator Gaillard, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you very much.
Now, the undercover video of the Bushway plant was made by the Humane Society of the United States, and your bill would require a Humane Society inspector to be present in slaughterhouses. Can you explain what motivated you to introduce this bill?
Yes. Certainly some history first. Several years ago, I was handed a book that detailed inhumane treatment of animals in slaughterhouses. As a member of Senate Agriculture Course, I read that book and also shared that with the Agency of Agriculture. And the inspector came back with a book about 3 weeks later and said, no, what goes on, none of the stuff that is outlined in this book take place in the state of Vermont. Then along comes the Bushway situation, and we discover that, lo and behold, it does. And that's what prompted me to write the legislation and look for some organization that would certainly put a conscience, a morality, and an ethics in that facility to make sure the animals that are due for slaughter are treated humanely before that point.
And what kind of authority would you like these inspectors to have?
All I want them to do is to carry out the rules and the regulations that are presently and laws that are presently on the books, which obviously wasn't being done at Bushway for a number of reasons. So it's nothing new there. I just want someone to enforce the rules and the regulations. And obviously, under the Bush administration at USDA, that wasn't taking place. So I reached for some other outside source that certainly would enforce the rules and regulations.
Would an inspector under the legislation that you've proposed be able to shut down a slaughterhouse?
Yes.
So this would be a change. I mean, right now we don't have an inspector in there all the time, and you would have an inspector there all the time?
Well, actually, Bushway was a federally inspected plant. There was an inspector in there all the time. The problem at Bushway was that one of the things in agriculture, we refer to the USDA as the United States Department of Agribusiness, okay? Agribusiness. And in that sense, what they were doing was looking out for the industry, the slaughter industry, rather than really the animals themselves or even the laws regulating humane treatment. The inspector was in the plant, and he was constantly being overruled by the district office that he reported to. And that's where the breakdown was, and that's where the system's failure took place. Bushway packing was shut down, as you may have already mentioned, three different times for cruelty to animals in May, June, and July. And Bushway learned absolutely nothing from that experience. And basically, they didn't have to learn anything from that experience because all they did was pick up the phone, cry to the district office. The district office overruled the inspector, and they were back in business.
Well, in fact, the Federal Government Accountability Office recently released a study that agrees with what you're saying in the sense that they said the federal government is doing a lax job of enforcing the standards that
That's
are
right.
on the books.
That is my point. They are doing a lax, very lax. And if you look at the report coming out of USDA in terms of humane slaughter and incidences of humane slaughter, you'll notice that there's a number of them on there where plants have been shut down for inhumane treatment of animals. In fact, I'm looking at, there's probably 40 pages here, well, not quite that many, 30 pages here in front of me, which with lines all the way down through indicating the names of the plants and the checkoff where they have been shut down for inhumane treatment of animals. So this was going on across the United States and not just at Bushway.
Do you think in Vermont slaughterhouses that Bushway was an anomaly?
Yes, I do. So, I think for the most part you find that Vermonters that own those facilities and work in there are trying to do the best job they can. Bushway is certainly an exception to the rule, but because Bushway was an exception to the rule, I'm still not going to back off on the fact that those animals should be, and I want to be guaranteed that those animals are going to be humanely treated. Let me just give you a few examples. Bushway was skinning calves that were still alive. That, to me, is totally and completely unacceptable. Throwing calves down from the second tier of a double-decker trailer is not acceptable. And it goes on and on. So I want to make sure at all slaughterhouses that, in fact, I see this piece of legislation as positive for all of them. It's not a negative. It's a positive. It ensures that the rules will be followed. That's a positive thing. It's not negative.
Now, you are a former dairy farmer yourself. How has your work with animals affected the way you see this problem, do you think?
I had a total number of cattle. I'm a former dairy farmer. I had 350 head of cattle at peak. What I discovered was I didn't need cattle canes. I didn't need sticks. I didn't need cattle prods to deal with animals. What I found was you could talk to them. You could direct them with your hands. You could tap them on the forehead to back them up. You did not have to be, you did not have to yell. You did not have to use rough treatment. In fact, with my employees, I told them, you hit my cattle and I will fire you. Those are mine. They belong to me. And we're not going to be treating cattle in that fashion here. And I needed those employees more than they needed me, but that was the standard. That's what we lived up to. And my cattle would come up to me. I didn't have to go chase them. They came to me.
Now, Senator Guyard, is it your goal to get this bill passed, or is it enough for you, in a sense, to just keep this issue in people's minds and on the table?
Well, the piece of legislation has gotten national attention, and it's gotten the attention, and I think of the Agency of Agriculture here in the state of Vermont, and certainly organizations within this country. So the bill has accomplished what I wanted it to do. The question is now: is USDA going to take the steps to ensure there's humane treatment of animals that are headed for slaughter, or will this just be a bump in the road and they'll go back to business as usual? So I will be certainly watching this process very, very closely as time progresses, and I hope that, and you know, and what this done is it's woken us all up to what's going on in some of these slaughter facilities, and I don't think as members of the legislature will go back to sleep on that. I know I won't.
Addison County Senator Harold Guyard has introduced a bill that would add a new layer of inspection to the operation of slaughterhouses in Vermont. Senator, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank
today.
You very much for calling me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Saturday is the spring equinox, and it marks the beginning of the Persian New Year, which is celebrated throughout Iran, Afghanistan, and other parts of Central Asia. The tradition dates back thousands of years to pre-Islamic times. For 13 days, beginning Saturday, friends and family will visit, exchange gifts, and gather for picnics. In each home, a table is set up containing items that symbolize life and renewal. It's a Persian New Year tradition that's carried on by many Iranians who live in this country. We asked one Iranian Vermonter to explain.
My name is Mitra Samimi Yurek. I moved here from Iran in 1979. I have been celebrating Nowruz every year, particularly since my daughter has been born, because I wanted her to be introduced to her mother's roots and traditions. We'll go now to the Nowruz table. It's called a hafsin table. Hafsin means seven S's. Traditionally, you have to have seven different symbolic elements on your table. The most common ones are, for example, apple. Apple is a representation of love. One of the things you do prior to Nowruz is you grow grass. You either grow lentils or you grow wheat, and the symbolism of that is rebirth. Third thing I can mention is sumac. It represents color of sunrise. The fourth element I have here on my table here is garlic, which is for medicine and health. Goldfish is a symbol of life, and water is also a symbol of purity. And the mirror is something else for self-reflection. And the seventh item that I have is called serke. Serke is vinegar. Vinegar is for patience and for old age. A few last items that we do, and it's pretty traditional, and it's actually one of the must, is a representation of the holy book. If you're Muslim, you have the holy Quran on your table. If you're a Zoroaster, you have the book Avesta. And in my case, my family are from Baha'i faith, and you know, we put the Kitab-i Aqdas. Now, traditionally, when you celebrate the first day of Nowruz, people will sit around and read Persian poetry. And one of the most classic books that you put on your table is Book of Hafiz. Nowruz-e Shoma Mubarak means happy Nowruz to you. and we say, Satsal be insalha, 100 years to the many years you have compiled already. So that's my wish to everyone. Satsal be insalha, and Noruz-e Shama Mubarak.
And you can see photos of the Nowruz table at our website. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. That'll do it for today. On Fridays, Bob Kinzel hosts the discussion. Tomorrow, he'll be joined by House Speaker Shap Smith. And Bob, fill us in.
Jane, we'll talk about some of the big issues moving through the legislature, including the proposed budget for next year. How will the budget be balanced, and what kind of cuts are going to be needed? We'll also talk about a highway safety bill that includes a ban on handheld cell phones and a primary enforcement seatbelt law, and possible changes to the state's healthcare system.
All right, if you have a question for Shap Smith, you can send it to vermontedition@vpr.net and then tune in for the show tomorrow. The program is produced by Patty Daniels, Steve Zind, Sarah Ashworth, and Sarah Yam, with production assistance from Michelle Jeffrey. Rick Singeri directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. We welcome feedback and suggestions for Vermont Edition. Contact us anytime at vpr.net.